Whammy Radio continues.
I wish I found some better sounds no one's ever heard. I wish I had a better voice that sang some better words. I wish I found some chords in an order that is new. I wish I didn't have to rhyme every time I sang. I was told when I get older all my fears would shrink, but now I'm insecure and I care what people think.
My name's Blurry Face and I care what you think. My name's Blurry Face and I care what you think. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out.
Smell will take me back to when I was young. How come I'm never able to identify where it's coming from? I'd make a candle out of it if I ever found it. Try to sell it, never sell out of it. I'd probably only sell one. Maybe to my brother, cause we have the same nose, same clothes, homegrown, a stone's throw from a creek we used to roam. But it would remind us of when nothing really mattered. Out of student loans and treehouse homes, we all would take the ladder.
My name's Blurry Face and I care what you think. My name's Blurry Face. And I care what you think. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out.
Used to play pretend, give each other different names. We would build a rocket ship and then we fly it far away. Used to dream of outer space, but now they're laughing at the face, saying, wake up, you need to make money. Yeah. We used to play pretend, give each other different names. We would build a rocket ship and then we fly it far away. Used to dream of outer space, but now they're laughing at the face, saying, wake up, you need to make money. Yeah.
Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out.
We used to play pretend, used to play pretend, bunny. We used to play pretend, wake up, you need the money. Used to play pretend, used to play pretend, bunny. We used to play pretend, wake up, you need the money. Play pretend, give each other different names. We would build a rocket ship and then we'd fly far away. Used to dream of outer space, but now they're laughing at the face, saying, wake up, you need to make money.
Yeah. Whammy giveaway here with Jared Mintz and Kelly Scaletta from FanRag Sports as the Clipper season wrap-up continues. In a span of 2 years, Doc Rivers became head coach, president of basketball operations, and a father. As head coach, he refuses to stagger minutes for Paul and Griffin. As president of basketball operations, he settles on acquiring players who have once played for him or defeated him. As father, he makes the trade for his son and was criticized for nepotism. Doc Rivers felt he could do no wrong because of his 2008 Celtics championship ring, until, for the first time as a Clippers coach, he was ejected from a game in Brooklyn, exposing Rivers as a lame duck coach desperate to protect his job and image. What has happened to Doc Rivers since joining the Clippers? Has he gone over his head in managing his man-made Cerberus? Is Doc Rivers corrupt?
I'm going to go first because I think Kelly might have more choice words than me. No, I don't think he's corrupt. I just think, you know, he kind of took on more than he's necessarily able of doing. I think he came into an organization that wasn't a great organization, and they looked at Doc as kind of the savior. Granted, he did really good things in Boston. He also did them with Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce. And I'm not saying that to say he's not a good coach. A couple of guys have come from the Doc Rivers coaching tree, even if they were on coaching trees before that were maybe more illustrious. I think Doc's a good coach. You know, I think he's good at managing players' emotions. I just think, you know, talent-wise, he's made some poor decisions, and he hasn't really kept an eye on the future in anything he's done. I mean, obviously, you have Chris Paul. You're trying to win now, but I don't think he's as good of a personnel guy as he is as a X's and O's coach.
I'm actually kind of on the same page there. I think that Doc, he has his limitations, and he has some limitations that were beyond him. He had the great trio there, but I just think that one of the problems the Clippers have is they keep trying to trade bad bench players for other bad bench players, thinking that eventually if you get the right combination of bad bench players, you're going to get a good bench. I criticized signing his son. That contract has not turned out to be that bad. I think Austin has improved a lot this year, and he's proven me wrong. He's become he's worth his contract. I don't want to say he's an elite player or anything, but he's worth his contract. You know, I think sometimes we look at general managers and we say they did this, they did that. But you also have to look at what is available to them. And I can't look at anything, any move that was realistically available to Doc Rivers that he passed on.
How much of his acquisitions have been from draft bust? Because I know he signed Byron Mullins. He's gone. Wesley Johnson was a top pick, and he really didn't pan out well. And people are calling him a draft bust. So do you think Doc is too much in love with trying to turn people that have already passed judgment on these players as failures just to prove them wrong, so to speak?
Well, Wesley Johnson wasn't his pick, right? He was like 2010.
Yeah, he was picked by Minnesota.
Yeah. And it's not like Wesley Johnson panned out everywhere else he played. He was kind of a career nobody by the time he got to the Clippers. So Wesley Johnson didn't pan out. You know, he didn't pan out with the Lakers. He didn't pan out with the Suns. He didn't pan out with the Timberwolves. So now it's like Doc Rivers' fault that he didn't pan out. But he's a great example of failed bench players. Like, okay, let's go out and get this other failed bench player, and maybe he'll replace the other failed bench player and not be a failure. But he doesn't have money to work with. He doesn't have picks to work with. You know, like, you can trade bad bench players, but all you're going to get back from is other bad bench players. And so it's just like there's this new cesspool of bad bench that he works with every year. And every year it falls apart. And because it's not working, he overplays his starters. And then because he overplays his starters, they get hurt in the postseason. And then they get hurt in the postseason. So then the Clippers get bounced because injuries. So it's kind of a cyclical thing, but it's like, can you name a move that would have been a great move that he could have done and we would have solved the problem? Where's the great wing that he needs that he passed on? And I think even, Mbute? I always want to call him More Booty. I think he's actually exceeded expectations. Like, who saw he could have done that well? And so I think some cases he's done a good job of getting at least somebody to fake as a wing, but he just doesn't have that guy.
How would you rate the Clippers benches under Doc Rivers? Rate them from worst to worstest.
Yeah, I'd say that's a good scale. Worst to worstest.
It's gotten worse over time. That's for sure. I mean, you know, he comes in and I don't remember. I want to say he still had Eric Bledsoe there. And moving forward, you go from Eric Bledsoe to Darren Collison to kind of no point guard on the team last year. It was really Jamal Crawford and Austin Rivers handling the offense off the bench for the team. You know, this year's bench is probably the best bench he's had in a couple years. Like Kelly said, he kind of traded bad bench players for bad bench players, or at least swapped out one for the other, giving up assets sometimes, you know, along the way. I do think this year's bench is pretty good, though. And I think that, you know, it's one of the reasons the Clippers have been better, even, you know, without having Chris Paul for stretches, without having Blake for stretches. They have a pretty good bench this year, all things considered.
One unique signing this year was Maurice Spates, a big with a knack for shooting threes and taking charges. I was against this move at the time because he played for the Warriors. By getting a member of the 2015 Warriors championship team, Doc thought that Spates would show him the secrets of Steve Kerr's system and use it to his advantage. I was worried that if Spates underwhelmed in LA, Doc would do the same thing he did to Josh Smith, trade him back to the Warriors, opening up a new can of worms where Spates would show his former team how to shut the Clippers out. Thankfully, Doc didn't make any midseason moves this season, but by signing Spates, do you think Doc Rivers made a deal with the devil?
I think he got a bargain, so I don't know if maybe Doc went to the devil to ask for him to give Mo Spates, you know, this talent that he didn't really have in the past. Because I think this year's Most Bates has been the best version of Most Bates we've seen since Florida or something like that. I get what you're saying in terms of trying, you know, to sign guys from teams that are rivals of yours. But I think you get a guy like Most Bates. He just wants to win. He's a veteran. And again, the Clippers just haven't had very good players in the front court off the bench. You know, you mentioned Byron Mullins earlier. They also got Spencer Hawes, who was such a bust for them. So to have Spates, who can kind of space the floor a little bit, he's having his best season from deep, or at least he was the last time I looked at the numbers. I think if that's a deal you make with the devil, then you make that deal 10 times out of 10.
I need to give a shout out to one of the greatest tweets in the history of Twitter. Steve McPherson. Some people call me the Spates Cowboy. Some people call me Murray's. That was like this classic rock guy. That is a classic rock song.
Got him.
I cannot even look at his face without thinking Spates Cowboy. I want him to wear a Carl Malone cowboy hat.
Oh my God. That's the funniest thing.
You need to get some water there, God. Man. You're going to be okay.
Oh, it will take a while. Keep talking while I try to recover. Please, please keep talking.
Okay, so anyway, that was one of my favorite tweets of all time. And, yeah, I think that he's having a great season. And he's a great kind of bench guy. And this is what I was referring to when I was mentioning having roles filled. And what does he do? He provides efficient scoring off the bench. What else does he do? Pretty much absolutely nothing. But he's so good at that. And when he gets hot from deep, I mean, it's just crazy what he can do. And he's like sitting there, you know, draining threes, and it's just, you know, he adds an element. What's he shooting this year? About 38% from three, something like that?
37.7.
Yeah, I like him. I think he's not like just a one-trick pony. He can score at the rim too, but
the volume is the incredible thing. The fact that he's taking like 3.5 threes a game. Last year he took almost one, but prior to that, I mean, he's taking 3.4 threes a game. It's incredible.
That's why I say he likes to space the court.
Oh, my God. Once the face of the Boston Celtics, Paul Pierce has seen his play grow, diminish, and grow again. The Hall of Famer recorded career lows in all categories since donning a Clipper uniform. Despite being a detriment to the team on both sides of the court, Doc Rivers still signed him and continued to use him. The more Doc played Pierce, the more I realized the coach's over-reliance on him as a paradoxical crutch. In Rivers' 17 seasons as coach, he has never been to the conference finals by himself. In the years Pierce was not with him, Doc went through 2-3-1 collapses, the first one back in Orlando, and probably the one that got him fired from the Magic. The truth in Doc's eyes has been reduced to a lucky charm and security blanket. What is your overall opinion of Paul Pierce? Did Doc and Pierce reunite to help the Clippers get out of pressure-packed situations, a.k.a. manifest sudden death shots, or to protect Doc's image and reputation as a championship coach?
It's more of the former than the latter on that one. I mean, unfortunately, with players Pierce's age, you just never know when the season's going to be that they can't produce the way that they had been. We saw Pierce take a little bit of a backseat role in Brooklyn and then with the Wizards, and it kind of looked like that version of Paul Pierce would be a good fit with the Clippers, except they didn't get that version of Paul Pierce. They got the expired milk version of Paul Pierce and a guy who just can't move, isn't knocking down threes anymore, and just can't really play. So it's really bad timing, and it's unfortunate, because if they would have gotten even the Paul Pierce from a season ago, you know, that being the 2014-15 campaign, I think he would have been able to help the Clippers a little bit last season. Yeah, they had those injuries that it just didn't matter, but Paul Pierce hasn't been a player for the Clippers, and it's just, it's unfortunate that they got the oldest, most washed-up version that they could have possibly hoped to get of Paul Pierce.
You know, it's 2017, the truth doesn't matter anymore. There's a fake news joke here, I'm just not finding it. But, you know, yeah, it's just, he just got old. And he was, you know, doing well with the Wizards as a stretch four, and, you know, it seemed like a nice way to fit him in. But, yeah, he's been horrible, but I think he's like 39 now. 39-year-olds tend to struggle in the NBA. That's why they tend to retire before they get that old.
So no relation to the 3-1 collapses without Pierce or the inability to make the conference finals without Pierce. So there's nothing to that.
Yeah.
But it does bring a bad image of Doc, and that's why I have to question his resume, because it just makes it seem a little smelly to me.
That's fair. I mean, people question Doc as a coach, and, you know, you can draw to him winning with Hall of Famers on his team and not winning without them, but you can kind of also do that with every coach. And, I mean, we're looking at Phil Jackson now, and Lord knows the Knicks are a pile of flaming garbage, so is that Phil Jackson's fault? Can Phil win without Shaq, Kobe, Jordan, Scottie? It's tough to do. I mean, for me, I like to give coaches the benefit of the doubt and hope that they elevate, you know, the major talents. But at the end of the day, you really just don't know.
Austin Rivers was the 10th pick in the 2012 draft. When he hit the Big Easy, he hit it hard and not in a good way. Failing to live up to his 15.5 points per game from his only season at Duke, Austin was traded to the Celtics. When Doc Rivers made the call to bring his son over to the Clippers, sports outlets panned the acquisition as putting the family name ahead of the greater goal. But I saw the trade differently. At a time when trust among the Clippers was losing cohesion and the murmurs of DeAndre leaving growing by the day, Doc hoped the presence of Austin as a symbol for family would keep the team together. A side effect of father and son is that Austin's play has respectfully improved, with his inspiring one-eyed performance in Game 6 as his crowning achievement. Talk about Austin Rivers and his uncanny path to playing for his father. Has the father-son dynamic helped or hurt the Clippers' cause? Doc Rivers, too. Would you say that nepotism saved the Clippers from a premature breakup in 2015?
Can I just say I honestly do not know either person? So I don't know what their relationship is like, and I don't know how much it affects anything. Like, I see there's the nifty narrative that fits into stuff, but I think sometimes we just, you know, like we assume we know more than we do. I've read that they weren't exactly close growing up when Austin was growing up, because his dad was always coaching, wasn't around a lot, so they don't have a particularly close relationship. But I also think, you know, still, you know, it's your boy. It's gonna have, you know, hey, son, good luck in your next job. Like, that's got to be an awkward conversation at Thanksgiving.
That's the only reason I did not like that move, because then we'd have conversations like this.
But all told, you know, I think it's just a thing. You know, you have a coach that's a dad in the NBA, and you have a coach that's a son. And I understand the weirdness of it. I just prefer to stay away from it because I don't know the people.
That's fair. And it's awful, like, narrative-y to kind of do the whole, you know, the father-son aspect of this when it is feasible. They don't have a ton, you know, a major relationship. With that said, an awfully sourcey report came out a few weeks ago that there was resentment in the Clippers locker room because of Austin Rivers' contract and his playing time. I mean, these things that don't necessarily have names attached to them, you don't know what they're worth. But when you look at the Clippers and you see that they're disgruntled and it doesn't seem like they enjoy playing together and they're losing and going through a tough stretch, I mean, you can't help but wonder what some of the problems are. You know, with that said, I kind of like Kelly's approach better of, I don't know, so I'm not going to pretend I know. And that's kind of really what I fall in with, too.
We don't know.
You look at Austin Rivers and he wasn't great when the Clippers went out and got him. And then they gave him a contract last summer. And I think it was a fair contract, all things considered. And looking at the way he's playing this year, I don't think they necessarily overpaid for him. There were other teams that were interested in him. It's not like, you know, nobody wanted him and the Clippers jumped to give him this 3-year, $42 million contract. If anything, I thought it was a better contract than the Jamal Crawford contract. I don't know how much nepotism is really involved in this, or if Austin's just, you know, this level of player who's playing the right role on the right team. And I think he's kind of emerged as one of their better players once you get past that first layer of superstars that they have.
Yeah, but that contract of Austin pretty much, I don't know if I could say make Crawford mad, but it did something that almost said he wants out. I mean, he was this close to joining the Warriors, and then if the Clippers drew the Warriors in the playoffs, they would have to face their best friend.
Yeah, but Jamal Crawford's at, you know, what is he now, 36 or 37 years old, hasn't won a championship. And you look at the Warrior style of play, I don't know if Jamal's efficient enough to join those guys, but he's a bomber. He'd have fun playing with them. And just like we were talking about with Kevin Durant before, you only get to do this once. Crawford's been there, and he's a high character guy. He's one of the guys that everybody likes in that locker room, too. I've listened to him on the JJ Redick podcast a couple of times, and you hear them talk about the team. So you bring that up as them being best friends. I think they'd still be good friends. I don't know that he would have been turned off, though, necessarily by Austin getting the contract, because they were still able to get that contract to Crawford. And then they had Raymond Felton to the fold. So, you know, it's just kind of a matter of these guys filling the roles they need to fill. And with Jamal Crawford getting a little bit older, they kind of needed to keep an eye on the future. And I think it helps to keep Rivers around.
Every time Doc made a GM move, something goes wrong. The players don't mesh well within his system, or the player is just uncoachable. To remedy this, he either cuts the player or trades them with a draft pick attached. This season, the one thing Doc Rivers has done right is leave the team alone. When the regular season ends, it will be the second time in Clippers history that not a single mid-season transaction was made. This accounts for free agent signings, trades, buyouts, and 10-day contracts during the active season. The last team to have won a title without a mid-season move was the 2010 Los Angeles Lakers, the same team who Doc's Big Three Celtics lost to in the NBA Finals. We talk about acquiring players during a season whenever a team is faced with dire straits, but could the Clippers be an exception? How much do you think Doc contemplated on making a move only to retract from his statements and stay the course? Did Doc do the right thing in leaving the team alone?
Who was available? What were you going to do?
There was Melo.
Oh, no. You weren't going to make the team better by adding Melo. No offense, Jared.
It's all right. That's all right.
Because like a guy like Melo, you've got, it's not just a matter of, oh, adding Melo. It's you've got to get rid of, what's he making, Jared? Like 25 million?
Yep. And every year it gets bigger.
And so it's like you've got to ship out $25 million worth of contract to get that. Well, how are you going to ship out $25 million worth of contract? There's no, sure, you can send Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford or, you know, whatever, but that's not a realistic trade for the Knicks. There's just, people act like trades and moves are just this easy thing. You just go down to local NBA free agent store and you just buy stuff, or, you know, there's subtraction, there's addition, there's another team that's trying to improve itself. And so it's not that easy to make two teams better with one trade. And there's no way that the Clippers were going to do that with what they had to offer. The only contracts they have that anybody wants are J.J. Redick, Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, and DeAndre Jordan. And if you get rid of any of those guys, you're not making the team better. I would much rather have Blake Griffin on my team right now than Carmelo Anthony.
Back to the main question, would you rather have not made a single move, basically leaving the roster alone?
Yeah, I wouldn't have done anything because there wasn't anything they could do.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point by Kelly. I mean, it's just, it's difficult to make these moves. And you look at Doc, and Doc would have had to go after somebody familiar. And who would that have been this year? He went to the Jeff Green well last year and it didn't work out. Sure, can this team possibly be better than they are? Of course. But at the same time, I mean, the team is loaded with veterans and loaded with some contracts that are unmovable. I don't know what the move would have been to make. And I think this also just goes back to keeping Blake Griffin around. Blake Griffin's the one guy who, if you're going to trade somebody, I guess it's going to be Blake as an expiring, as a guy who could net you back, you know, decent value and some good players. But are you your best if you're trading Blake Griffin? So I think Doc Rivers was in a place where he just didn't have much flexibility. And maybe it's not a bad move that he didn't abandon ship on some of these guys. It was good that he got rid of Lance Stephenson last year and that he got rid of Josh Smith. I mean, the guys just weren't working out. So I think this year was the right move to kind of stamp at.
Doc Rivers has tried out many small forwards for the Clippers, and all of them have failed. Reggie Bullock, Jared Dudley, Matt Barnes, Steven Jackson, Antoine Jameson, Danny Granger, Chris Douglas Roberts, Hito Turkoglu, Joe Ingles, Dante Jones, Jordan Hamilton, Lance Stephenson.
I was born ready.
Brandon Dawson, Wesley Johnson, Alan Anderson. Even Paul Pierce, the only small forward Doc ever loved, has been hampered by age. As a last resort, Doc started to have his point guards, shooting guards, and power forwards pretend to be a small forward. This is what I like to call faking the three. We've seen Jamal Crawford and J.J. Redick play the three. Doc had his son play the three. When Chris was tasked to guard Kevin Durant in the 2014 NBA playoff series once, he was playing the three. With Griffin now taking threes, he might be tasked to playing the three. Luke Mbamute, a natural power forward, is their starting three. What is your opinion of the Clippers' small forward spots and their three-less small ball scheme? Do you think Doc's loyalty to Pierce as the true starting small forward and his fear of having to give up one of his big three in a deal stood in the way of fixing their small forward spot?
You know, people like to gripe over this position for the Clippers a lot. I really thought it was okay coming into the season with Mbamute listed as the small forward. He's a guy who defensively is very diverse. He's long. He's quick with his feet. Ideally, he's a power forward in today's NBA, but I think you keep him out there with Blake and DeAndre, and offensively, you know, you're not asking him to do much. He can knock down your occasional three, especially if it's a wide open three. I don't know who they were going to get again, and it comes down to, did you think it was best for them to keep Jeff Green and maybe he would have fit with this bunch? Because I don't really think that was the answer. Granted, like, maybe they could have allowed Crawford to leave and look for somebody else to play at the small forward. I don't think Paul Pierce is the answer at all. I think at the end of the day, they kind of envisioned themselves playing one of Crawford or Austin Rivers in crunch time next to Redick and Paul. And, you know, with that and having Blake and DeAndre up front, you're a little bit less worried about having, you know, an all-star or a name or a more solid contributor offensively necessarily at the small forward. And with that said, I think Bamute's kind of made them better defensively as a whole, and having him on the court, you know, kind of just gives them value beyond having a small forward that's going to make analysts and critics happy because they know who he is.
I remember at the beginning of the season when the Clippers were tearing everything up and their defense was the top rated, everybody was calling him a genius for the whole Mbamute thing.
There it is.
Mute, Mute.
The more booty. You know, I met a girl named Mo Booty one time.
Cool story, bro.
Now you have to tell us where.
This is a crazy story. I was on an airplane. I was on a flight, and the pilot accidentally triggered the air mass. And so we were flying to Raleigh, and they had to land immediately. So for some weird reason, we went all the way from Raleigh to like somewhere else, like in, I can't remember where it was, but it was like a good 3-hour drive away because we couldn't land in Raleigh.
We don't know.
We were circling Raleigh and we had to fly all the way to another city and land. So anyway, the girl that was sitting next to me, her name was Mo Booty, and she was a white girl, and she married into it. Her name was Maureen. She went by Mo, and then her last name was Booty, like the quarterback, you know, that USC quarterback.
John David Booty. I was thinking you were going to say you met her at a strip club.
The name Mo Booty, and I asked her, you know, like, did you think about this before you do it? And she's like, no, I just, until people started laughing when I would introduce myself, like, it never occurred to her that her name was going to be Mo Booty. Anyway, she was a nice girl.
Okay, let's get back to the Clippers stuff.
Oh, okay, so, yeah, anyway, you know, early in the season when the defense was, like, reeling off wins and everybody was talking about what a genius Doc Rivers is. So I think this is, like, one of those results post hoc type conversations we have. Oh, the Clippers are losing. There must be a reason why. This is why. Let's target this. And then it becomes a narrative in them. So, yeah. I think they do need a real wing, but I don't think that that's like a. I think he's been doing as well as anybody could expect him to do in that role.
The Golden State Warriors were just another lottery team until 2012-13 happened. In the third game of their season, Dubs met a Clippers team who was so arrogant over teams lower than them, they thought victory was ripe for the taking. After Golden State threw a monkey wrench into those plans, things have only gotten worse for the Clippers. They would go on to lose the season series 3-1 to the Dubs, practically punching their ticket into the playoffs for them. Warriors are also the first team to get Blake Griffin ejected with more than 5 minutes remaining in a quarter. Since Steve Kerr took over, the Warriors have enjoyed trouncing their Southern California rivals to an 11-1 record that includes a 10-game winning streak. Talk about a salt in the wound, the Warriors' first title in 40 years coincided with the Clippers' 3-1 collapse and the temporary loss of DeAndre Jordan. The Clippers' greatest weakness is underestimating lottery teams, but what they've done to turn the Dubs into champions is unforgivable. An argument could be made in that the Clippers are to blame for the Warriors' rise to the top. Is this truly the Clippers' fault? By failing to take a lottery team seriously in the 2012-13 season, have the Clippers unintentionally created a Dubs dynasty? Explain why.
I think that's a stretch. I think the Dubs dynasty has a lot more to do with Steve Kerr, Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry, and Draymond Green than it does the Clippers. I honestly think if you were to ask the Clippers about that, they'd probably not even remember what you're talking about. My whole thing about the Warriors-Clippers rivalry is like a big brother, little brother rivalry, where the big brother always beats up the little brother and the little brother resents it and hates it. And it just burns furor every time he thinks about it. And the big brother is just like, what's the problem, dude? Like, the beatings come so badly and so frequently for the Clippers, I can understand their sense that it's a rivalry. But to the Warriors, the Clippers are just that team that they always beat. Maybe they don't like them. Maybe that's why they just beat them into the ground. But I don't think that the Warriors stay awake at night thinking about the Clippers nearly as much as the Clippers stay awake at night thinking about the Warriors. I say this as a Bulls fan who has routinely been devastated by LeBron James. And LeBron James does not consider the Bulls his rival. But every Bulls fan alive will tell you that LeBron James is their rival.
Yeah, I'm with Kelly on that. I don't think that the Warriors are thinking too much about this. And also, the real start to their dynasty is Stephen Curry being unleashed with Steve Kerr, and also Draymond Green just stepping into being Dennis Rodman combined with, I don't know, your favorite playmaking point forward. The Clippers beat them when they met in the playoffs a few years ago, and that was still with, you know, the Donald Sterling fiasco in the background. Just since then, I mean, it's been the Warriors NBA, and no one's even in the same stratosphere as them. Yeah, they lost the finals last year. Sure, maybe LeBron is their rival, but it's the Warriors and everybody else is playing catch-up, and the Clippers are, you know, about as close as anybody other than the Spurs and the Cavs. Just they're not anywhere near them, and there's nothing they could do about it at this point.
The Warriors are invincible. Nobody can defeat them. Signing Kevin Durant sealed the Clippers' fate. But look on the bright side. Tim Duncan retired, Dwight Howard moved from Houston to Atlanta, and the Thunder lost Durant as punishment for their own 3-1 collapse. Before the season started, I predicted the Clippers were going to be the second seed in the West by default. Someone has to fill the void, and who better than LA's little brother, especially for what they've been through over the years. The path to the conference finals would be easier than before because they would face weaker versions of teams they've had trouble defeating in the past. Under one condition, they behave themselves. That means cutting down on technical fouls, flagrant fouls, ejections, off-court incidents, and their philosophies to competition, such as taking lottery teams lightly. Alas, the second seed deluded them. Well, at the very least, tell me, how has the Clippers fared this season? Do you think they behave themselves?
All things considered, I'm going to say they have. I think it's just unfortunate. I think injuries, if anything, have really derailed them. And that's one of those things, as we mentioned, you know, kind of at the top of the show, luck just plays a big factor in seasons and winning seasons and championship seasons. I think, again, that Doc kind of put together as good of a bench as possible. It's a good mix of veterans, and there aren't really any young players. I mean, this is a team that was primed to win now, and really, you know, injuries to Paul and Blake again this year have really been the one thing that have gotten in the way of that, in my opinion.
I don't know of any way they're not behaving themselves. I think it's just, you know, they got hurt, and the Rockets are better than anybody thought, and Kawhi Leonard looks like he's ready to take up the Tim Duncan mantle, and Pop still Pop, and the Jazz improved a lot. You know, it's just sort of a lot of people had the Clippers pegged in the number two seed, and things didn't go quite as well for them as we thought, and they went better for some other teams than we thought.
Speaking of ejections, something strange happened since DeAndre's return. The players were becoming impatient and fed up, driven to right their playoff wrongs so badly, their emotions often got the best of them. Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, and the father-son duo of Austin and Doc have been ejected from games. The Clippers are 0-6 when a player or coach other than DeAndre is ejected, but they are 3-0 when DeAndre is ejected. Why have the Clippers been able to win only those games where DJ is shown the door, but not when it's somebody else? Do you think the indecision and the fear of losing DeAndre again had anything to do with this record?
I don't know enough about the situations when everybody was ejected or who was ejected, but that seems a lot like correlation versus causation. And, you know, and it's only 3 games one way, 6 games the other way. So I think it's probably more likely that it has nothing to do with anything. It's just a coincidence with that.
I don't know who they played in those games, so I can't call it. If maybe, you know, those three games they played the Sixers, the Nets, and the Knicks, it's not really that hard to believe when the other six were two against Golden State, two against the Spurs, and two against, you know, another really good team. Here's what I'll say. They're obviously a lot better with DeAndre on the court, if that's really, you know, what the question is here. DeAndre's so key to everything they do. I think losing DeAndre would hurt about as much as losing Blake Griffin would, in all honesty, even though Blake is probably consensus as the better player of the two. DeAndre's just so important to everything they do. There's no question that they're better with him on the court. What I will say was interesting was Cole Aldrich kind of filled in pretty well for him last season in a couple stretches. When you get a big man who can kind of play pick and roll with Chris Paul, I think that they'll kind of flourish. But I think DeAndre's kind of as good as they could hope for somebody to fill that role.
Let me go ahead and fill you up on the ejections. There was a first ejection versus the Suns on 2015-16. That was Blake Griffin.
When in the game was it? Were they up or down?
I think they were down 1 point. Griffin already had a technical foul with Teletovic or somebody like that. But somebody instigated Griffin, and then Griffin argued on a missed foul, and that got him thrown out. There was a second ejection, the flagrant foul 2 on Taj Gibson in the third quarter. And then there was a Austin Rivers ejection to the Timberwolves. He was arguing a foul, but he also got hurt at the time, but they did not know, and the referees just threw him out. Then there was a DeAndre Jordan ejection. It was also his first career ejection versus the Milwaukee Bucks. They were down 10 points or around it, but he got ejected in the third quarter. This year, we had Doc Rivers ejected versus the Nets. Then we had an ejection versus the Wizards. And then you had the crazy second quarter ejection. It was first Austin. Then a couple seconds later, it was Doc. Then there was a late fourth quarter ejection between the Blazers and the Clippers. Jordan was thrown out with an argument with CJ McCollum, and they were up by one at that point. And there was like only 11 seconds left. And then the most recent DeAndre Jordan ejection, a flagrant foul 2, they were up, but it did cause the Clippers to lose some momentum. But the Suns never took the lead. Those are the ejections.
Yeah, again, I think they're definitely better with him on the court. I don't think that it's a chemistry thing either, or playing better without him. I'm going to chalk this one up to coincidental.
Only one player has avoided an ejection since DeAndre returned. Chris Paul. He's danced the line with technicals and flagrants plenty of times, but has never fully crossed it. Earlier, I mentioned how Paul has two personalities, one who'd help his teammates versus the feisty animal desperate to win a game. We want to identify Paul with the nice guy persona we see in the State Farm ads, and that might be the reason I think why he's afraid of an ejection, for it would compromise, possibly ruin, his image. It happened to Griffin with the two separate ejections I illustrated earlier, which could have played a part into the altercation with Testy in Toronto. What is it about Chris Paul's inability to get ejected? Is he too prideful to admit defeat, or do you think he is more concerned about protecting his nice guy image like Doc Rivers does?
I think he probably just hasn't gotten ejected in a little while. When's the last time he got ejected?
2013, Game 6 to the Grizzlies. Paul runs up to Marc Gasol during a free throw, jabs him in the ribs.
Probably more he's just a mature player and knows where the lines are drawn. Most players aren't wanting to get ejected. Like, DeMarcus Cousins doesn't go out and go, I haven't been ejected in a while. It's been three games. Of course, he probably would get ejected in the fourth. Yeah. Some players just have to control their tempers better than others. Know what to say to refs. And LeBron James never gets rejected.
Keep rolling!
Ejected. Never gets rejected either, really. Wait, who was it? Somebody. Kawhi. Didn't Kawhi block him one time? Anyway. I'm all over the place now. But, yeah, I think it's more just a matter of maturity.
He's the president of the Players Union. He's a relatively well-composed guy. I think part of it's probably image for him, too. But that said, he's a fiery dude. He's very competitive. He's as competitive as anybody. Has a killer instinct. He's one of those players. I just think, you know, the cream of the crop in the NBA tends to not get ejected as much as some of the other guys. And Chris Paul is one of those guys that just, like Kelly said, you know, talks to the refs a lot and kind of is always aware and present. So I don't think he loses it as easily as other guys do.
Do you think the time might come for Paul to take one for the team? They'll be facing the Warriors in the second round, and they've lost to them 10 times. Look at the Raptors. They had an 11-game losing streak to the Bulls before their win in March. That was the meeting where Robin Lopez and Serge Ibaka got into a fight and punches were thrown. Ibaka got the axe along with Lopez, but the Raptors' loss became their gain as they found the strength and fortitude to break the Bulls' winning streak against them. Take this into account too. The Clippers have had too many injury excuses. Paul or Griffin get hurt, Doc says they'll be back. But if Paul were removed from the game by the officials for disciplinary reasons, it would become a reality check. Clippers would finally admit they're not good enough, and Paul would be exposed as a superstar incapable of taking over. On the other side of the coin, it would be the quintessential sense of urgency that might drive them to face their fears and vanquish the Warriors for good. I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but hey, couldn't hurt.
I don't see any scenario where Chris Paul getting thrown out of a game helps them beat the Warriors. You know, if DeMar DeRozan had gotten thrown out of that game, they don't beat the Bulls. We saw how good the Clippers were without Chris Paul, right? We don't need to see that in the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't think he's the guy to do that. You know, in hockey, I guess you have a goon on the team who does that. Or in sports, you see a coach get ejected to kind of fire up a team. If they take Chris Paul off that team, I'm sorry, Raymond Felton is not leading your team to a comeback over the Warriors or anything of that nature.
What about Austin Rivers if he got another poke in the eye?
Austin was kind of like Tony Montana at the end of Scarface there, where he's going down firing, and he looked a mess, but he wasn't going to let the team die. He played his heart out. It's funny, you know, that's going to be his lasting image with the Clippers unless they win something meaningful and he's a reason for it. But Chris Paul's not the guy. He's not the one to do that. If anything, I think maybe DeAndre would take one for the team before Chris Paul would. He's just not going to see that happen.
I'd love to see J.J. Redick do it, just because nobody would expect it. J.J., mad! And then that might wake everybody up. Like, people are like, whoa, if J.J.'s mad, maybe we should be mad.
J.J. actually got ejected. It was 2014 season to the Timberwolves, and it was the closing seconds of the fourth quarter. Wolves were about to win that one, too. He also got fouled out simultaneously, so it was a double jeopardy.
One of those.
You don't usually picture him as the guy with the fiery temper on the Clippers. Anyway, everybody gets mad every once in a while.
Paul shouldn't be afraid to get mad. I mean, like, who knows? Maybe it will be like saying, we have to really take this to heart. Maybe we can win this game so that we can prove that we really care about Paul. Maybe we can prove to them that we need him here. I mean, yeah, he will come back on the next game after his ejection because it's not going
to
be like...
Let me just throw a counter to this. Who got fired up when Ray got suspended?
Who?
Last year in the finals.
Warriors. How'd it work out for the Warriors? It didn't work out for the Warriors.
What's that?
It didn't work out for the Warriors.
It did not work out for the Warriors at all. That's why they blew the 3-1 lead. You lose a superstar player, it is not good for your team. There is no upside to it. There might be occasional times where a team got fired up and played in his absence, but that's not the way you want to go around strategizing. Chris Paul, who was it again? Back when Mike D'Antoni was still the head coach. And they were getting destroyed, right? Chris Paul's like, no, let me back in, we can win this game. Remember that?
Oh, you mean the Grizzlies a comeback on game one?
Yeah.
That was Vinny Del Negro, Clippers coach, and Lionel Hollins, Grizzlies coach.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Vinny Del Negro. See, he can fire people up without getting ejected, that's my point.
From 1978 to 2011, the Clippers were losers under the evil... Donald Sterling, they have only made the playoffs four times. The Clippers also have the longest postseason drought of any team in the league from 1976 to 1991. If the Clippers have an early exit again, they could stand to lose everything and find themselves back in the lottery, rebuilding the hard way. It could take them another 15 years to get back to this position, maybe even longer. If the Clippers turn back into losers after this season, what will become of the Paul Griffin era?
I think money kind of dictates everything in the NBA for the most part. So I see this team's going to be back again next year. I don't know that J.J. Redick's going to be back. I would think he will be too. I don't know what they're going to do to improve moving forward. It kind of felt like this was going to be the make or break year. And if you lose, it's a break. And then, you know, who knows what they do moving forward. So assuming that, you know, they never win and that this is, you know, as far as they've gotten and we're never going to see them even hit a conference finals, it's going to be disappointing. It's going to be disappointing to have two top 10 to 15 players or so, plus Jordan and Redick on a team for, you know, this stretch of years and just not see them get that far. But I think it's going to look worse over time than it does right now, because over time people aren't going to want to talk about the Spurs or the Warriors as much as a factor, as much as they're going to want to talk about Paul not being able to get the job done. So unfortunately, you know, you hear the chirps already and you hear everybody call them a disappointment and an underachieving team. Unfortunately, I think that's kind of going to stick with them if they're unable to get further than they've gotten.
I'm kind of somewhat disagreeing with you here, Jared. I think Chris Paul could be gone.
Oh my God!
If they don't get anywhere. I think when you get to a certain point and you're looking at not so much, I don't want to say legacy, but Chris Paul wants a championship and he's got money. Kevin Durant was at this point last year. And there's a certain point where you have enough money. You're not like, oh man, if only I had enough money, I could buy salsa, dip my nachos in. You know, I mean, like they can afford salsa. They're not worrying about what things cost anymore. They have so much money that it doesn't matter what things cost to them. So extra money doesn't mean anything. Whatever house, whatever car they want, they can get. So between that and the endorsement deals, Chris Paul's making like around $30 million this year. He's going to make even more next year, wherever he goes. I don't think for him it's going to be about the money. I think it's going to be about, do they have a realistic chance to win? And I just don't think they do. I really don't think they do. I don't know where he's going to go, but I will not be at all surprised if he's not a Clipper next year. The only way I can see it saving is if somehow they can get somebody on the Clippers, and I just, in addition to the ones they already have, and I just don't see how that happens. I just don't. I don't see who that is. I don't see the guy available. Maybe he goes back to New Orleans. That'd be kind of interesting.
Oh, the Pelicans. That was one of the rumors that came about after DeMarcus Cousins was traded there. Everybody was saying, oh boy, Paul's going to want to go to the Pelicans. But I treat it as New Orleans is going to try and take Chris Paul away from us.
From your perspective, Chris Paul's perspective, he's going to want to go somewhere where he can win. And I just don't know if that can happen where he's at. But you know what would be funny is if he went and he signed with Dallas and then Blake and DeAndre went and they locked him up and they talked him into changing his mind.
Oh, the indecision part due. How long do you think the Clippers will be out of the playoffs if they break up? Give me a number of years.
Four.
Jared?
It's hard. I mean, they break up, meaning everybody leaves and they're just DeAndre Jordan and Austin Rivers. I mean, I don't know what to expect. I could see them still being competitive just because, again, I think DeAndre is a good player, but I don't know how depleted their situation is, but I don't think Doc Rivers is necessarily the guy you want rebuilding a young team. So I could see it also taking, you know, 4 to 5 years or so if they're left for broke.
Do you think they will break the 15-year drought, or do you think another team will do it?
The Kings are already well on their way there, aren't they?
Bye-bye, DeMarcus.
Yeah, the Kings are looking at a decade at this point. I think this is year 11 for them, I want to say, something like that. And the Knicks may never make the playoffs again, for all I know. I think that record might be safe, though, for a little bit. If anyone's going to break it, it's going to be the Kings, this Kings team.
There have been plenty of discussions for and against breaking up the big three of Paul, Griffin, Jordan. The guys hate each other. It's the only way to get a small forward. They're not good enough, and so on. But the Clippers won't do it. Griffin is their beloved number one draft pick. Paul was a godsend. Jordan is the longest tenured Clipper. Griffin and Jordan are friends. They've grown and bonded together through the Donald Sterling scandal, the 3-1 collapse, and the Toronto incident. The Clippers love these guys so much for what they did in changing their culture, they'd rather lose in the playoffs with them instead of winning a championship without them. With the Warriors standing in the way of a conference finals appearance, it's become clear their championship window has shut. But compared to what the Clippers used to have under the Sterling regime, they'll take this over having to stave another season in the lottery. If the Clippers can't get out of the second round or win the title with this roster as currently constructed, and I'm only referring to the core three, what now? Do you accept defeat, continue to establish a foundation of success with the same core in hopes that a future generation of Clippers will lead the way to the finals? It took the Spurs almost 21 years of pounding that rock to get to their first championship. Do you think love, friendship, and family is more important to the Clippers right now than winning a ring? Let's also remember this. They have no retired players.
You mean they haven't retired any jerseys?
Right.
Well, I think what you need to do is it's kind of like more, maybe the ship sailed. Maybe the trade deadline was, that was the time to make the decision. Right now, you don't have much choice. Either like Chris Paul and Blake Griffin walk or nothing, or you stay together. But, you know, if Chris Paul and Blake Griffin walk, you're really screwed, right? You don't have somebody there that you can rebuild around. So you've got to try and re-sign him. But whether you can or not, it's up to them, not you.
I understand, you know, is the strategy of keeping these guys together and hoping to win with them worth it for them? Or do you just try and go a different route? For me, I talk about this a lot on Twitter, how it really shouldn't be, you know, viewed as a bad thing to come in second place or to finish behind other great teams. And as long as Chris Paul's willing to accept that, I'd have to imagine the Clippers are willing to accept Chris Paul and that situation. I don't know what they need to do differently. I mean, it's clear that some of the guys are aging, and by some of them, I mean Redick and Chris Paul are getting a little bit older, but it clearly isn't affecting their game. It just, what are they going to do to put the right players around them to try and elevate them past where they've been at this point? And I don't know that there's an answer. And I think this kind of goes back to, Kelly, you were talking about Chris Paul wants to win. Where can he go to win if he leaves the Clippers? And does he have a better chance winning if he stays with the Clippers, with Blake, with DeAndre, and hope that, you know, they could work around that core? It's just, it's all very unclear. So I think if you're the Clippers, yeah, you try to keep these guys together and you try to win with them. And if you can't, I mean, you can't get past the Warriors. Kelly said, this is the best team we've seen feasibly in NBA history. And I think he's right. It's just, it's hard. It's hard to get by them and you kind of have to deal with it. I don't think it's worth blowing it all up right now. I think you take another couple of 50-win seasons and, you know, maybe you hope for an injury or something to help you prevail.
But, you know, just for grins, because I'm a Bulls fan, I have to go down this road. This would be fun. Say Dwayne Wade opts out of his contract and then signs a new contract for a lot less money. Chris Paul takes a little bit of a pay cut and Blake Griffin goes to the Bulls. Maybe Chris Paul and Blake Griffin go somewhere. I think the Bulls have almost enough, you know, if they don't take Rondo back, they have enough money for close to two max contracts. Imagine a starting five of Chris Paul, Butler, well, you know, with Chris Paul, Butler, and Griffin together, and then Wade, and then Robin Lopez. So CP3, Wade, Butler, Griffin, and Lopez. You think that's better than what the Clippers have right now? And it's certainly got a better small forward.
Yeah, for sure.
You're in the East, still got to get past LeBron, but that's good enough to scare LeBron. You're definitely going to get to the conference finals with that team.
Some vintage Beck to jam in your decks. Off the Mellow Gold album, it's the 1993 alternative rock hit, Loser. More Whammy Radio after this.
Whammy Radio.
In the time of chimpanzees, I was a monkey. Butane in my veins and mouth to cut the chuggy with the plastic eyeballs. Spray paint the vegetables, dog food skulls with the beefcake pantyhose. Kill the headlights and put it in neutral. Stock car flaming with the loser and the cruise control. Babies in Reno with the vitamin D. Got a couple of couches, sleep on the love seat. Someone came saying I'm insane to complain about a shotgun wedding and a stain on my shirt. Don't believe everything that you breathe. You get a parking violation and a maggot on your sleeve. So shave your face with some mace in the dark. Saving all your food stamps and burning down the trailer park. Yo. Because one's got a weasel and other's got a flag. One's on the pole, shove the other in the bag. With the rerun shows and the cocaine nose job. The daytime crap of the folk singer's club. He hung himself with a guitar string. A slab of turkey neck and it's hanging from a pigeon wing. But get right if you can't relate. Trade the cash for the beat, for the body, for the hate. And my time is a piece of wax falling on a termite. Who's choking on the splinters? So I'm a loser, baby. So why don't you kill me?
Get crazy with the cheese ring.
So I'm a loser, baby. So why don't you kill me?
Drive by body pierce. Yo, bring it on down.
Things are gonna change. I can feel it. So
team other than the Clippers are you looking forward to seeing in the playoffs?
I want to see a Rockets Warriors finals. That would be fun.
That would be fun. It makes me feel bad because, you know, again, the Spurs are just having another incredible year, and I can't think of a team that I want to watch less come playoff time. It's not because they don't play fun basketball or good basketball, nothing to do with that. I just think in terms of matchups, I'd like to see either Westbrook get hot or Harden get hot, or even, I mean, we're talking about the Clippers here. I'd be pretty happy to see the Clippers, you know, advance a round or two if they have it in them. The way things are constructed currently, advancing a second round means they'd have to beat the Warriors, and I can't really see that happening. You know, it might seem obvious. I'm pretty interested in watching the Warriors come playoff time too, though. I want to see how they do. I want to see how they respond to last year, and I want to see how they look with Kevin Durant. So I'm getting pretty excited to watch them. You go to the Eastern Conference, I'm kind of excited to see how things play out. I thought Toronto was really good earlier in the season, and they had some injuries. I want to see how they look at 100% with Serge Ibaka mixed into things. So they're one of the teams I'm watching out for. And of course, you know, Boston's had this incredible year, and be interesting to see if they could finally have some playoff success.
Give me your playoff predictions. What do you expect to happen in the playoffs?
Cavs Warriors.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it'd be cool to see playoff Rondo come back, you know, playoff Rondo from 5 to 7 years ago. That'd be awesome.
Maybe this time he can throw Kyrie Irving into the scoring table, but we won't talk about that. Although, you know, I was thinking if the Cavs and the Celtics play again, that would be their first series since that epic 2009 series.
NBA Finals winner?
Cavs over the Warriors. Or, I mean, Warriors over the Cavs.
Keep rolling.
Yeah. Warriors over the Cavs.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with Kelly. I can't see anybody beating the Cavs, even though I think this is the most competition they've really had in the conference. And that's not to take away from that 60-win Atlanta Hawks team a couple years ago, but I think that the East is a little more balanced up top this year. I really hope Toronto can kind of find themselves, but I just don't think anybody could really touch Cleveland. You know, as Kelly mentioned, they just destroyed the Celtics last night in what was, you know, apparently the biggest game in the Eastern Conference this year. So I don't see anybody coming near Cleveland, and same in the West, and I just think both these teams at full strength, which is what we should be assuming, give me the Warriors and give me them in, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6.
So we're finally going to see Kevin Durant's first championship ring.
I think so.
Yeah, I believe so.
It's about damn time.
Much deserved to him. Thank you so much for appearing on Whammy Radio. Where can we check you out on the web?
You can check us both out at FanRag Sports, and I'm at Kelly Scaletta on Twitter.
You guys can follow me on Twitter at jmintz, that's M-I-N-T-Z, at jmintzhoops. And again, as Kelly mentioned, we're both at FanRag Sports. I am solely on the NBA. Kelly, you do NBA. You do NFL stuff too, don't you?
I don't do NFL stuff anymore. I went full-time to NBA a while ago. And I'm on B-Ball Breakdown a little bit, and I'm on Bleacher Report sometimes.
Give a shout-out to Nick Hosselman.
What?
Coach Nick.
Oh, I never knew his last name, believe it or not.
You've been listening to Whammy Radio, the only podcast in the World Wide Web with the balls to break down the walls. You can find me on the Twitterverse at twitter.com/whammygiveaway. That's WAMMYGIVEAWAY. Make sure to follow me for the latest updates. And finally, if there's an episode you missed, the podcast archive is up and running at whammygiveaway.tumblr.com. This is Whammy Giveaway signing off. Enjoy the playoffs, y'all. Peace. We'll be right back.
DeAndre Jordan. Followed monster jam by Blake Griffin.
Off of the distance. Defender goes down.
3+1.
Griffin open for 3.
Bingo! The Austin River Show.
5 seconds to go. Kicked away. Picked up by Bass. Paul has it at 2. JJ drives and scores to beat the buzzer.
This night is
the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the original authors and other contributors. These views and opinions do not necessarily represent those of ESPN, Bleacher Report, SB Nation, the National Basketball Association, and its staff, and or any or all contributors to this digital recording. Portions of this podcast have been pre-recorded. The reproduction or redistribution, in part or in whole, of this digital recording is strictly prohibited.
Whammy Radio.